to the Dubious Consumers Podcast for the week of February 21st. My name is Justin Hurd.
My name is Nathan Steinman.
Skyler Deal.
And we're back.
We are back.
On a somewhat regular schedule.
Consistency, consistency.
Something like that, at least.
Yeah.
We were actually going to have a couple other people, including Dave, who gave me no end of shit for not inviting him to the last podcast. But he's out of town.
Yeah, it happens.
He went to the lake. He wanted me to delay it a week. I told him no.
Yeah. Maybe later.
Yeah. Maybe next time he can be on. He also was like, well, Dave's would be better for me. And I'm like, I have my kids. And
yeah, so
kind of like with the New Year shit show, I ended up having to bow out 20 minutes from the end of it just so I could get my kids ready so I could take them to their mothers.
When I'm pretty sure you can hear your children at the end of that.
I'm not sure. Yeah, who knows? But trying to, at least. Graham was terrified of you guys, so that happens.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
We're not terrifying.
Not at all. No. But, so we are here for Nerd à Trois, your top three favorite drug trips.
Well,
not personal drug trips.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know if you can remember those.
I think I'm going to need to go change my list.
So one time in Tijuana.
Drug scenes, not necessarily drug trips.
Well, I figured, I was thinking drug trips, but oh well, it works.
Yeah. Well, then one of mine doesn't really work, but it's still going to be on my list. So,
well, and some of mine are kind of questionable as well, so we'll see how this goes. So, Skyler is going to be choosing next Nerd à Trois.
Woo!
So, Skyler, what is your number three favorite drug scene?
Okay. Kind of a more recent one in the last few years, Dread.
Oh, yes.
Dread. I heard a lot about it, so I decided to check it out because people were talking about it in comparison with that movie, The Raid. Kind of the same kind of premise, people in a building.
Definitely.
Well, they came out the same year.
Yeah, so I decided to check it out. It was on Netflix, and I started hearing whale music. And in slow-mo, and it was awesome. Actually, I think they got the inspiration from it by listening to Justin Bieber's song Slowed Down, which is a rumor I heard. Because if you listen to Justin Bieber Slowed Down, it sounds incredible.
It's like, this is incredible noise.
Yeah.
Oh, like the videos where it's like, it takes like 60 hours.
Slowed down by like a whole lot.
See, I haven't watched any of those. I was just thinking of the slow-mo guys who record everything at, however many.
Just having the high speed.
Yeah, with that high speed camera. But for some reason, like, watching those videos are like trance-like.
They just
have the perfect music for whenever it's slowed down, whenever it speeds back up and then slows back down. Like, it has this just great meditative quality to it.
In that moment in Dread where they shoot the guy with the slow-mo before they throw him over.
Yeah.
You start in that perspective.
That was crazy.
I was like, oh, God.
I'm trying to imagine what it'd be like if you were on that.
Yeah, I was just like...
Like when they throw Mama over the end, it's like, whoa.
Yeah,
those scenes in that movie were awesome. I hadn't seen anything. The closest comparison that popped in my head was the very first episode of Cowboy Bebop, whenever Spike and Jet go after I guess I don't know if he's a drug dealer, but anyway, he has some kind of drug that he sprays in his eyeballs, which slows everything down.
Yeah.
But he's like rushing. He's like, going all crazy, but everything's in slow-mo and he's like dodging bullets, which is why Cowboy Bebop is such an awesome anime. But, Dread, those scenes in the movie with the drug trip scenes are pretty cool. Pretty cool.
And I love the idea of all the people who are high as I'll get out on slow-mo just as Dread comes in to slaughter all of them. Like that is an amazing thought process, all that stuff kind of put together is just amazing.
Yeah,
and that's a Alex Garland script as well, that movie.
What's he done that I might know?
28 Days Later,
Sunshine.
Or sorry, 28 Days Later, Sunshine.
Ex Machina.
Okay.
He's that guy. He's
all right.
Guy. He's literally the master of speculative fiction.
And Ex Machina was his first debut.
Directorial debut.
Yeah. Ex Machina? No, Ex Machina. Someone's like, why are you calling it Ex Machina? I'm like, wouldn't you call it that?
The only reason you want it is because you're wrong.
Your God is in the machine.
Oh, man. I need to watch Dread again.
That's always the problem. There's a video game series called Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, I had to explain to a friend of mine the difference between Deus Ex Machina and just the concept.
Yeah.
He's like, is it based on a video game? I'm like, no.
But the game series is cool if you like cyborg, cyberpunk kind of stuff and noir mystery.
Yeah, the problem is that everybody calls it Deus Ex.
Yeah. Deus Ex. Machina.
It's Deus.
Yeah,
Deus.
Yeah, I need to watch Dread again. Yeah. That's my number three.
Yeah, that Carl Urban performance was awesome.
You know, I didn't even know it was him until the credits.
Oh, yeah. You have no idea because he sells the character.
And doesn't take his fucking helmet off.
Yeah, like you would in a violent situation. So I guess it's my number three.
That would be correct.
Yay, it's my number three.
Woo.
My number three is going to be the one that is not a drug trip so much as a drug-related scene, but the opening of Super Troopers.
Oh, God. It's the only good part of Super Troopers.
What?
No. It's not the only good part. It's my favorite part of Super Troopers.
I just really dislike Super Troopers, but I love that opening scene.
You don't like the animated monkeys parts?
The guy eats the entire bag of... the entire bag of weed, then the entire bag of mushrooms. And the fact that they just kept fucking with him. He's already pulled over, man.
Littering and.
Yeah, littering and.
Yeah, the whole, Timmy Watt understand why they, like, would speed past him and then drive backwards really quick. I caught it later.
No, what's great is the drive off.
Yeah.
Then they end up behind them. Like, they don't pull it in reverse, but they just end up behind them. Pulled up, going, pull over. He's like, and then they do the thing where they peel off. Then they drive all the way back. And then they pull them over again.
Oh, man.
Oh, man, it's great.
That guy, he's married to Christina Hendricks from Mad Men.
Jay Chandrasekhar?
Yeah, and the guy who did all the drugs in that part.
Oh, the drug guy.
No, yeah.
I thought you were talking about...
Oh, yeah, that guy is married to Christina Hendricks.
Wow. But, yeah, if you have not seen the Super Troopers, despite what Justin says, it's a broken lizard joint.
Jim Gaffigan's
just not,
in it, too.
I'm just not a big broken lizard fan either, so that's just my sense of humor.
For me, my favorite of theirs is Beer Fest.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Got the Eye of the Jew.
Not seen Beer Fest.
Oh, Beer Fest is hilarious.
I saw
Beer Fest is infinitely better than Super Troopers.
Now, the one I've seen multiple times is Club Dread.
I've only seen that one.
So,
yeah.
Words.
But they're doing another Super Troopers, though.
Yeah, Super Troopers.
I think they did it on Indiegogo and it went through. They got enough funding to make one.
Yeah, because they've been trying to make Super Troopers 2 for like 3 or 4 years.
I had no idea it was like a independent film, really.
Yeah, and Jay Chandrasekhar is he still does stand-up and stuff. And
yeah.
Apparently part of his show is basically just answering questions about Super Troopers. Because, like, that's all people want to talk about after he does his routine. So he just does like a Q&A period where he just talks about Super Troopers. But so that would be my number three favorite drug scene, not really drug trip. You don't really see any crazy hallucination or images or anything. It's just a great piece of comedy, physical comedy, sight gags. It's great.
I will allow it.
Yeah. So, Justin, what is your number three?
I'm still kind of working on figuring out which one's my number three, so I guess I'm going to have to pull the trigger here.
I know. I kind of had to just do that as well.
Move screen, move.
Keep scrolling.
It's probably, this is more like the entire fucking movie is a drug trip.
Okay.
It would be Naked Lunch.
Ah, okay.
Because the entire thing is based off of him being fucked up on his insecticide bug powder.
The bug powder, yeah.
And
have you ever read Naked Lunch? Have you read it?
I've tried to. I know, like that.
I've never read the restored text. I've read them as the two different books, as Naked Lunch, and then later as Inner Zone, which they reincorporated all of that stuff.
Well, from what I understand is he wrote the book normally.
No. Actually, what it was is what he was living in Morocco. He would smoke a bunch of, he would do a bunch of weed,
as you do,
or hash, and then go wandering around. And then when he got back to his apartment, he would just write about all the crazy stuff he sees, you know, and adding all this hallucinatory stuff just because he was doing so many drugs to try and stay off heroin for a while. But
see, the thing, what I understood was that it was part of his technique that after it was written, he cut it up and then...
No. The cut-up technique is later.
Okay.
Because
I thought that came with Naked Lunch.
Because Jack Kerouac and and Allen Ginsberg traveled to Morocco, and they found that there's actually that scene in Naked Lunch where they arrive.
Right, right.
And they're going through the material. Like, that's based on true. Okay. Like, they came and they assembled the text from all the randomness that he'd written. But you have the guy with the talking asshole, which wasn't in the movie. Should have been in the movie.
Well,
especially with Cronenberg.
I was going to say,
if it had been a Japanese production, it would have been in there.
I was going to say, I mean, that's essentially what the typewriters, that's what everything is essentially in that fucking movie.
And the mugwumps look great in that movie. The crazy insectoid aliens.
Right.
And the typewriter, oh, man, did Rick Baker do that movie as well?
I am not sure about that.
Because it totally seems like either Rick Baker or the guy who did The Thing did it. Just because of all the...
Rob Bottin.
Yeah, just because of all the air, the pressurized air rubber effects that they were doing to make the typewriter move and talk and stuff.
Right. I'm pulling it up trying to see if it had. But yeah, I just absolutely love that movie and how freaking insane it is. It's just... My ex-wife absolutely hated it, and I watch it like once a year at least.
Yeah, it's totally not a narrative film. It's not meant to be. No, you're not to sit there and go, man, this 3-act structure is incredible. No, it's like a visual feast,
right? You know?
And the book doesn't follow any sort of traditional narrative structure,
right? Which is part of the reason why I thought that it was.
The first cut-up novel is The Wild Boys, I want to say.
Okay.
Let me double check the. There's a trilogy of books that he wrote that include one called The Ticket That Exploded. They're considered a trilogy, and they're the complete cut up novels. Like they were, he would write or copy text from articles and stuff and cut it up into fourths, and then reassemble it and then retype the whole page.
Right, right.
And then
do
it again and again and again, adding more texts and adding more material, and then taking all that material that you'd written and then organizing it into kind of chapters or sections. And so you get these repetitions, these cyclic kind of repetitions of images and phrases that come in and out, but you also get these weird juxtapositions and compositions of interesting phrases. I've only read two of them, specifically The Ticket That Exploded, but if my iPad will work for me today.
I've honestly never seen Naked Lunch, but I know enough about it to
I saw it during my massive Cronenberg overdose that I went in, because I discovered that Movies Etc. had almost every single Cronenberg film, including some of his early ones. Like you could rent, like, because they had videotapes. A shit ton of videotapes, and they were just incredible. Like, I remember watching Rabid and Scanners and, you know, Videodrome.
Scanners and Videodrome.
Naked Lunch and good, yeah. Dead Ringers. And
Naked Lunch is definitely probably my favorite, but for some reason, I'm a huge Cronenberg fan, but I hate Lynch.
That is weird. I will say that specifically, I think, Cronenberg is more focused on story. Like, most of his movies have a structure, where the structures of Lynch's movies are less, they're much more abstract, you know, and they're not so focused on, you know, actual,
all that good stuff.
Yeah, like actual storytelling. They're more dream logic, more, less, right, you know,
yeah.
And that's just, I love it because I love that kind of associative, you know, you build up certain images and ideas, and over his oeuvre, you kind of discover, like, oh, that's kind of what that means. Okay, when I see electricity going wrong, like flickering, and you see blue lights, you're in a dream place, even if no one's dreaming, you're in a piece of the dream logic. But Naked Lunch is awesome. I'm sorry, I'm having trouble.
It's a cult classic too. Yeah,
it is. So Skylar, what is your number three? I mean number two. I just did my number three. That was Naked Lunch.
Yeah. Sorry, I talked about it, but...
Yeah.
Oh.
He knew more than me.
Well, I'm a huge William S. Burroughs.
All right. My number two is a 1967 film called The Trip, directed by Roger Corman.
Oh.
Starring Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, Bruce Dern, Susan Strasberg. Partially written by Jack Nicholson. Roger Corman did LSD to help him get it down to know what A Lovely Sort of Death is like. Roger Corman, he did a lot of, like, you know, cheese ball kind of exploitation films. He did a lot of films based off of the works of Edgar Allan Poe. He also did that unreleased Fantastic Four movie.
I've actually seen that.
Really?
At a comic book day at the...
I really like this movie. It's a cult classic, and I had just randomly watched it one late night on IFC. They just played it, and what caught my attention when I turned it on is Peter Fonda is like running through the woods being chased by men on horseback, and he's dressed kind of like he's in the medieval ages. Turns out that whole part he's on an acid trip. The whole movie he's on an acid trip. He's like a director who's going through a divorce. His wife's cheating on him. So he has a buddy who's kind of his guide, and he's like, okay, I think you might feel better if you do acid with me. Well, the guy, I don't think he does acid, but Peter does, and he's hanging out with all these hippies in this kind of like squat. And then I guess he freaks out and runs off, so he's running around the Sunset Strip with all these people. It's that 60s psychedelic thing right there in the Summer of Love, you know. It came out like at the right time, I guess.
Yeah,
it's got all the kaleidoscopic visuals, the body paints, the dancing, the music,
kind of art.
Stuff. Yeah,
I love some of that kinetic art stuff so much.
My favorite element of the movie is the music. A lot of it is done by this band called the Electric Flag. Huh. They're like a blues rock band led by Mike Bloomfield, and their drummer, his name is Buddy Miles, who went on to play drums for a band of Gypsies and Jimi Hendrix, but. They didn't last that long.
I thought that name sounded familiar.
Yeah, they kind of made their debut at Monterey Pop, even though they were left off the film. But there's footage of them playing there on YouTube, I guess like uncut stuff. If you get like the Criterion Monterey Pop collection thing, they probably have it on there. But Electric Flag, they did a soundtrack to the movie. And man, it's just like awesome jamming, just... The movie's on the move because Peter Fonda is like running through the whole movie, freaking out on acid the whole time. And I had thought, I imagined the whole thing because the one scene he's sitting in this room freaking out, and it's really kind of a cheap set, kind of like the Monkees used to look, that old TV show, The Monkees. But Dennis Hopper's like sitting on like a merry-go-round, rolling around and dressed up in crazy clothes and talking to him. I'm like, Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper. Am I watching Easy Rider right now? No, I'm not. This is before Easy Rider.
Like, that's pre-Easy Rider.
Which, if you ever seen Easy Rider, they drop acid in New Orleans while they're hanging out in a cemetery, which is like the craziest part in the whole movie. Which, I hate Easy Rider. I hate that movie, but I like The Trip.
I've never actually seen all of Easy Rider. I've only seen chunks of it.
I haven't seen it either.
It's,
I haven't seen it at all.
It's a product of that time.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's supposed to be in some ways the seminal, like,
on the road.
Well, but just like it's that very 60s culture of, you know,
long hair, doing your own thing, having fun, all that.
There's some of the biker gang stuff. There's some of the hippie stuff. There's some of the
crazy backwoods Florida people stuff.
Yeah. Some of the yippie kind of Abbie Hoffman stuff, you know, where, you know, they were being real political, real radical. But also the fact that they all the drugs that they were doing in the movie, they were actually just doing the drugs.
I believe it.
Yeah.
And Jack Nicholson looks insane in that movie. He's kind of insane anyway, I guess. So, yeah, The Trip, number two. Good movie.
So, Nathan, what is your number two favorite drug infected shit?
This one is going to be, for me, this is a movie called Altered States.
Ooh.
By Ken Russell, the same person who directed Tommy. For those of you who have ever seen Tommy. But, so Altered States is a movie about somewhat, it's based on a novel by Paddy Chayefsky, the guy who wrote The Network. But he had nothing to do with the actual, the screenwriting or anything. But it's somewhat based on John C. Lilly, who's a guy who developed the sensory deprivation tank in the 60s.
Which I would love to do at some point.
Oh,
but
yeah. I would love to do it, yeah. Full on. But the concept is he travels to Mexico, ends up taking part in an ayahuasca ritual. Mm. And that first trip is so intense. So amazing.
Oh, I bet.
In the movie, the visuals are so intense and intercut between all these different various...
What year did it come out?
1980.
Wow.
So, it's a totally... It's William Hurt's kind of debut. Drew Barrymore's debut is in this movie. There's several drug trips in the movie because it's about a guy tripping and then slowly reverting into earlier versions of life on Earth. Mm-hmm. You know? De-evolving, but it's a fascinating exploration of both the kind of mythology of drug trips, but also just how we interpret like people who are on that edge of insanity, and they start seeing connections and things that we don't necessarily understand.
Right.
But several of the trips are incredible in the movie, but the first one just sets the tone. It's such a visual feast. It's so like intense and just really shows you the kind of power of that that Kuleshov technique of association, you know, cutting between these things and seeing how you react to them and how it changes your feelings along with the music. And speaking of the music, you'll find this interesting. John Corigliano, who's a famous classical composer and teaches at Juilliard to this day, it's one of the only films he's composed the music for. And the music is just on the top, just at the edge of avant-garde kind of awesomeness. So that's mine, is the first ayahuasca trip in Altered States is my number two. And so, Justin, what is your number two?
So my number two comes from an anime named Bleach.
Okay.
It's a freaking awesome anime. One of those ones that's 366 episodes for the complete series.
Holy shit, gravy.
But it's also one of those that 50% of them are filler, so you can skip past entire seasons.
When they catch up to the actual manga, they can get back to the real story.
The weird thing is, so the basic idea of Bleach is that it's about this kid who can see ghosts. In the first episode, he comes across this woman who's being attacked by this giant creature with a hole in its chest, and goes to help her, and she transfers her powers to him, and he becomes a member of, or a kind of substitute Soul Reaper. And has this giant, you know, Cloud Strife Buster sword, sort of meat cleaver sword, and has this tremendous amount of power that nobody, you know, everybody's shocked about. And really, really good. Does, you know, the second season's very similar to Dragon Ball Z, where he is continually going against people who are higher in rank than him, managing to surpass them as well as unlock extra abilities, and becomes a part of this society as a substitute reap, kind of, that becomes his area. There's this giant, so basically the people that they've been fighting are hollows. They're spirits who haven't moved on, have a chain that gets ripped out and creates a hole in their chest and become these giant mindless creatures. They end up becoming against these villains called Arrancar, which are basically hollows who have managed to regain a sense of self and revert back to their human form. They're basically like the anti-Soul Reapers.
Interesting.
Super powerful. But there's this giant arc of the anime that is basically their assault on the Arrancar desert planet sort of thing, or reality. And so it goes entire seasons, and then they will pause in the middle of a season, do a separate 26-episode season that has them back in Soul Society, completely ignoring what's going on in the normal anime, and has an entirely different storyline for those 26 episodes. And then you get to the next season, and it's right back where it started. So I watched it without any of that filler. So I just got like this just constant like punching in the face battle, like between...
See, that's why I gave up on Naruto, because it got really filler and I was kind of getting bored with it.
And that's what happened with me, is that because of Bleach and its... Actually, because of Dragon Ball Z and its filler.
That was the classic case.
On Bleach, like, you watch stuff like that and you get characters who... Like, every episode that's an actual real episode, you'll know this from, like, Dragon Ball Z type animes, is that... It ends with like people shouting at each other. Somebody just got punched. You're like, oh my God, what's going to happen next? And when you're watching a filler episode, I accidentally watched two, and both episodes basically ended with two characters talking in the middle of the street in the middle of the night. And it ended with like, dun, dun, dun. And then the end credits went. I was like, wait a minute. Did the episode just end? Because literally nothing happened. Oh, it's filler. Okay, fuck me.
Thank you, fans, for going. These are the episodes you can skip.
Yeah, there's an entire website called animefillerlist.com that you can go, and it will tell you how good the anime is in regards to filler and what all the episodes are and if they're mostly canon, if they're mostly filler. So I just skip them all. But so during one of the Arrancar battles, this guy basically has Wolverine powers. Super regenerative, no matter what they do to him, he's there and he's kicking the shit out of everybody. One of the Soul Society people is a scientist. And essentially what he does is infects this guy with a bunch of, you know, sneaks in a bunch of drugs that takes over this guy's system. And it's one of those very Inception ideas. Mm-hmm. Every second that passes by is going to feel like a century. And so...
That's kind of cool. That reminds me of something from Naruto also.
Okay, so they probably did something similar there. But it shows the guy's point of view as it basically looks like this sword has stopped. Then the guy just slowly slides the sword into the guy's heart. Kind of saying, you know, by the time that this gets to you, you're going to want to die.
Yeah.
Your powers aren't going to work anymore. And you'll have basically given up all hope and pray for death. And so that's what ends up happening, is you see from his point of view as he's just staring at this sword moving inch by inch over the centuries until it finally pierces his heart, and he's begging for, you know, for 100 years is begging for it, you know, to finally pierce him. So for probably, you know, 10,000 years is begging,
Jesus,
kill me. God, I want to die. So that, to me, that's a pretty brutal drug trip right there.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah, and then he literally, the moment it pierces, you know, you see from his point of view, and then he just turns black and just fades, you know, becomes ash at that point.
In a way, it kind of shares that idea with the slow-mo.
Yeah, definitely.
Like,
yeah.
You know, when it's used, especially as part of killing, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, imagine that with Mama hitting the mm-hmm. ground there. So, Skylar, what is your number one drug trip, drug experience, drug-fueled rampage?
I tried to get you to watch this. I think it gave you a headache. It's called Enter the Void.
Oh, yeah, I knew that was going to be your number one.
I think it's...
I actually watched the DMT sequence a couple times.
I think it's the craziest, most outrageously awesome drug trip movie I've ever seen.
I need to see it. It's on my Netflix.
It has instantly become a cult classic.
Yeah, I was just listening to an interview on Marin's podcast with Crispin Glover, and he goes, so is there anything recently that, you know, you really like? And Crispin Glover's like, and just sits there for like what seems like a minute. And then he goes, Into the Void. And I'm like, gasping away. And I was like, okay, now I need to see this movie even more.
Have you ever seen Irreversible?
I haven't seen Irreversible. It's actually on all my horror movie lists.
Oh, man, that movie, it's very hard to watch, but this was the film he made after that.
His new film just came on.
Yeah, his movies are real, sometimes borderline pornography. And
they're real bleak.
Very. This one, it's actually pretty amazing how this one was filmed. It's all in the first person perspective, kind of floating above stuff too. Okay, the plot of the film is this guy lives in Tokyo with his sister. They're orphans. They live there together. They have a buddy who, you know, helps them out to get drugs. The first scene in the movie, the main character, don't remember his name, smokes DMT, and he sits there and has a short DMT experience. And then a bad drug deal goes wrong and he's shot. And right before all that happened, he had read the Book of the Dead. And so I guess that kind of leads him on this limbo kind of journey. And he's floating around Tokyo, his spirit, before he goes off to wherever he thinks he's supposed to go. And he can see all this stuff happening, like his sister and people he knew from there. And so the main drug scene is the DMT trip at the beginning, but the rest of the movie is so druggy in itself. It's all like one gigantic drug trip. And the neon lights of Tokyo, they filmed it there because of how it looks, Tokyo. Yeah, yeah. I highly recommend everybody just go on YouTube and watch Enter the Void opening credits. That's actually my favorite part in the whole movie, besides the DMT scene. The opening credits are crazy. It's just all like, you know, the whole cast, the crew, everything shown at you in very, very fast cuts, really loud music, and it's actually performed by LFO, which is an electronic artist who passed away a couple years ago. LFO, he was one of the first, you know, kind of electronic techno raver kind of guys. Yeah. And it's real scratchy, and it'll probably give you a seizure if you watch it. This was a movie I had just heard. I read about it in Fangoria, actually. That's how I discovered this movie, was Fangoria.
It's not even that old, is it?
Mm-mm. No.
2011?
It came out in 2009 at Cannes, 2010, and yeah. And I don't think it's on Netflix anymore. It could be on Hulu.
I think it is on Netflix still, because I think... Mm. It was still on my queue, I think, last time.
The movie's, it's awesome to watch for the visuals. The story and everything else is not that great. But the visuals alone are, it's amazing how they filmed it. Especially doing a first-person perspective without shaky camera, you know.
Yeah.
Like, there's a scene where the guy watches his face, and he looks up in the mirror, and you're him looking at yourself. And you feel like you're on drugs while you're watching it, or if you're really stoned or something. And I watched it with...
So that sounds like...
I watched it...
either a composite or some crazy mirror shot. Well,
yeah,
you,
I like. Mean, there's a new movie coming out that does something similar, but it's an action movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
Hardcore Henry.
Yeah, Hardcore Henry.
Which obviously was in front of the Deadpool.
Yep, yeah. Sure was. So, Enter the Void. That's my number one pick.
Okay.
Check it out.
Yeah, I knew that. As soon as I said it, I was like, oh, shit. I should probably just take that off just to fuck with Skylar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that would have hurt if he did that. Because I don't know what else I would have picked. There's, yeah. I mean, I could have said this one, but what is it?
Nathan, what's your number one?
So my number one is a movie nobody's ever seen, and I mean that sarcastically, as in it's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and it's the Adrenochrome sequence.
I was thinking, I think that's the one you wanted me to take off the table.
No, this is the one
I was wondering if you were going to take off like the open, or if you were either going to take that movie off, that or Trainspotting. I couldn't tell which one.
I was afraid you were going to do Fear and Loathing. Yeah. But it's like that one.
So I rewatched that sequence specifically. I didn't have time to rewatch the whole movie, but the leading into it, so they had, so Dr. Gonzo had basically kidnapped this girl and was giving her a bunch of acid.
As you do.
Dropped her off somewhere else to be rid of her, basically, because he's a fucking maniac, and you can tell that from the movie. The Dr. Gonzo character is not supposed to be like a positive character in any way.
Nope.
Which is funny because the guy was like a civil rights lawyer.
I was gonna say, so that's who I've been modeling my life after.
Pretty much. The scene opens. Raoul Duke or Hunter S. Thompson has arrived in the hotel room. The Dr. Gonzo character is on the phone with Lucy, who's called. They actually, this is one of those scenes that I kind of hope that the guy from Every Frame of Painting does, Tony Zhao. I hope he does it, because it's a perfect staging. Like, between the camera movements, and as he's taking the adrenochrome, Dr. Gonzo is, like, faking like he's getting into this fight with the phone so he can hang it up. And, like, Johnny Depp is in one, you know, half of the frame, and Benicio Del Toro is in the other half of the frame in far back. And, like, the camera just keeps swiveling as, like, he's taking more adrenochrome and he puts the towel on like it's a nun's habit. And then he, you know, puts the little American flag like it's a napkin in his lapel. And Dr. Goss is giving him, with a Bowie knife, giving him shots of cocaine as the adrenochrome comes on. And Dr. Gonzo turns into this crazy beast monster. Oh man, that whole sequence.
Yeah, that part was so crazy, dude.
Where he stopped. Dr. Gonzo is like, is about to walk off, and like, you just get the shot of the Raoul Duke character, and his pupils are pinholes. And he's like, finish the fucking story. And it's just this, you know, like.
And you can't believe that's Benicio Del Toro, too. It's crazy.
I mean, both of them are basically invisible in those roles, you know? Benicio Del Toro is one very... He is so much heavier than I've ever seen him. And like, Johnny Depp doesn't move anything like Johnny Depp in any of his films.
I think it's one of his greatest performances.
Even when he went back and did Hunter again and Rum Diary, he doesn't do near the complexity of mimicking Hunter, you know. But for me, that's my number one drug scene in movies. And Terry Gilliam, who says he's never done any drugs in his life, and yet all of his movies are so fucking weird. he's just that
kind of guy.
He's just that way. I mean. You know, I could totally see it if you were just that kind of weird, you know. But, so, Justin, are you ready to reveal your number one drug scene?
So, I actually just changed mine. Thanks to Skylar, actually. Because Skylar mentioned, I thought I gave you a headache, which Enter the Void didn't. I watched probably a good 30 minutes of it, and fell off. I need to watch.
Remember, we watched it on your big screen TV that one night.
Yeah, the one that's behind us that we need to put down. But
I was like, Justin, watch this right now.
No, mine is a field in England.
Ah, yeah.
I need to watch that.
That actually gave me a headache.
Yes, yes.
Watching that.
So the thing about that one is it's done by a director, Ben Wheatley. Now, Ben Wheatley is known for stuff like The Kill List and Sightseers. He's on ABC's of Death. You know, he's
directed several. He's directed two episodes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, he's
wow.
He's a very interesting director, very visual. Like that seems to be his thing. Like going after watching Kill List, which is very 8mm meets
good
True Detective.
So 8mm meets good.
Yes, that sort of thing. And then I watched about half of Sightseers and just kind of fell off. I still have it on my list. I'm gonna finish it, but it was just one of those that's kind of like these people are both psychopaths, but neither one is willing to admit to the other that they're a psychopath. And this is gonna get
typical.
Dark. A Field in England. I just went off on knowing. Or actually, here's the reason why I watched A Field in England. IO9 had an article where the guy said that his greatest inspiration for A Field in England was Primer.
Huh.
The moment I saw that, I went, I have to watch this movie. I do not care what this movie is. I have to watch this movie.
His greatest inspiration is Primer. I have to watch this movie.
Right. And so the actual idea of A Field in England is that it's set in 17th century England during the Civil War.
The Cromwell?
I'm not sure.
But the English Civil War.
Yeah, English Civil War. And these two men meet up, and then they are captured by an alchemist. And there's this whole like undercurrent of magic, but it's very subdued. Like, it's one of those movies that you're not actually sure anything's ever going to happen in it. A lot of conversations. A lot of pushing people to their breaking point. Until one point where the main character starts eating a bunch of psychedelic mushrooms in order to unlock his powers to take on the alchemist who has them captured.
Wow.
Which then, like, it's one of those, it's the super, like, quick flashes, merging images, all the stuff that caused a bunch of kids in Japan to have a seizure.
Because
with Pokemon,
that's the type of shit that does give you seizures if you have epilepsy.
And can cause migraines and all that good stuff.
Yeah,
I watched it once all the way through, and that scene was mind-blowing. Just all the stuff going on, and the wind suddenly picks up, and it goes crazy for a little bit there.
Is it also kind of Jodorowsky influence?
Yeah, definitely Jodorowsky's. You know, honestly, I almost put Jodorowsky on my list, but I didn't because everybody is actually taking acid while they're performing.
not the movie is on acid. It's all the performers.
He at the beginning of Holy Mountain, which there's just two women and he shaves their heads. They were both tripping balls on acid when he shaved their heads.
Yep. Like you do.
As you do for a movie, you know, like that's Jodorowsky's thing is, with Jodorowsky's doing, I wanted to make a film that was like an LSD trip without the drugs.
Good job.
Okay.
I think you succeeded in all your other movies.
Yeah. So,
like if you've never seen Vando and Lee's, whew. Literally with like a page of script based on a play that they'd done, they went out and just filmed this whole movie.
there you go.
Like you do. You know? But A Field in England.
A Field in England. I totally recommend it. I know it's been on Amazon Instant Prime. I think it's on Shudder.
Is right now.
And so. I don't know if it's on Netflix, but on Amazon Prime. Yeah. It's on. It should still be on there. And as I said, I think it's on Shudder.
Okay,
but
it was Cromwell, the English Civil War was 1642 to 1651, and that is what led to Oliver Cromwell's reign at one point. Sorry, and an addendum, the specific novels that are the William S. Burroughs cut up trilogy or Nova trilogy are The Soft Machine,
Okay.
Which Skylar might recognize from a band named The Soft Machine.
Yep.
That later became Gong. The Ticket That Exploded and then Nova Express are the three cut-up novels.
Okay.
So. But, yeah.
So, we did have one
user submission.
That
also
would be,
known as not couldn't be here today submission.
Yeah. That would be David Ferguson.
Yeah.
And it was the peyote scene from Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Yeah. Which, as we found out doing a little bit of research, we were wondering, like, was it totally looks like Rob Zombie when we were talking to him when we looked it up. It is based on drawings and concept art of Rob Zombie, but the actual director of that sequence was Chris Pranowski, who's worked on things like Metalocalypse and Super Jail and stuff like that. So if you are big fans of that kind of weird, surreal Adult Swim animation, you can see the kind of roots of what would end up becoming more mainstream and more acceptable in the Beavis and Butthead Do America sequence. And it has a Rob Zombie song over it.
Yep.
Or actually it might be White Zombie, a White Zombie song.
Oh, yeah, at that time, probably.
Yeah.
They hadn't broke up yet.
Yeah, 96, so it's right before they broke up. Mm-hmm. So it's probably the last White Zombie collaboration.
They were a really good band. I like them a lot.
Never really listened. I just listened to Rob Zombie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm a horrible person, I know.
Well, the thing is the two records that were major label, they're much more that you can tell the influence that it had on Manson, the influence it had on Disturbed, the influence it had on so many different things with the kind of riffy electronica kind of feel.
Little industrial in there.
Yeah, a little KMFDM.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The influence, like you can tell.
Definitely.
Charlie Closer actually did a lot of programming on both of those records and on the remixes. He did some of the remixes. But with White Zombie, they're the first record, which was like 89 that I could find, maybe 87, but he actually I totally forgot, it's actually a bluesy kind of riff rock.
Really?
They're way bluesier in the 80s, man. They're way less industrial.
That's pretty cool.
But But it's totally worth checking out if you haven't ever really gotten exposed to White Zombie before. But did anybody have any runners-up?
I had a couple. I mean,
you can go ahead and start.
Then. Yeah, mine were the movie Filth.
Yeah, okay.
Which, is it by the same writer? The book, is it
same
by the
same writer as Trainspotting?
Trainspotting,
yeah.
And it's just a real quick thing. It's whenever James McAvoy's character goes out with his kind of repressed buddy and they go to a club and he slips him a couple tabs of ecstasy.
Yeah.
Which has one of the best, like, they're in this club, the guy's super uptight, there's a couple gay guys there, and he's like, oh, that's disgusting. And the next thing you know, he is up dancing with his shirt off, having a string of lights that he's... You know, yeah. Shimming with, like, it, one of the best just smash cuts I've seen revolving drug scenes. The other one would be 21 Jump Street.
Okay, that was on the end of my runners up. I didn't know if I would talk about it or not.
I went back to go watch that scene, and it's just amazing. 22 Jump Street tries to do something similar, but it's nowhere near as good. 22 Jump Street's awesome still. It's totally worth watching. But 21 Jump Street
has the better drug.
Oh, scene. Yeah, with the guy's like eyebrows coming off to form a mustache, and then head becoming an ice cream cone, and that's when their tongues come out. You know, I don't like that. Put your tongue back. Are you guys on drugs? No. Quantum flux capacitor, fuck science. And it's just number 4 written all over the board. Overconfidence. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah.
Also, all the little video game
yeah.
things that they do. It's like stage one giggles.
Yeah, I need to own that movie just for that scene.
Yeah.
Or watch it every day as a daily affirmation. You know, a that daily sort of affirmation. Yeah. So, Skylar, you have any?
Yeah, there's three I'll say real quick. I'm kind of watching a YouTube video while I'm talking about this.
Thank you for your full, complete attention, Skylar.
Well, I had to find the name of it, and I remember now. There's a film called Renegade, or it's also called Blueberry, the other name. Came out in 2004. The reason why I'm looking it up is when I was getting into that movie, Enter the Void, people are like, you think that's a DMT trip scene from a movie? Check out Renegade, man. Check out Blueberry. Check out that movie. So the guy drinks ayahuasca in it, and he's hanging out with a Native American. Well, I think probably someone way down south. And the difference between the DMT trip in Enter the Void and this one is that this one has a lot of fractals in it. Also, you have a lot of more creature effects in it. It's way more trippier than Enter the Void. It's actually kind of a more horror, scarier kind of vibe. Oh,
this is based off of Mobius.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, just I'm looking at the Wikipedia.
Michael Madsen's in it too, I think. And yeah. I forgot that English actor, but Eddie was the English actor, and it was also in, I think he was in Irreversible, Gaspar Noé's film.
Is this the Old West one?
It's like a Western kind of movie. Okay.
But yeah, it says based on the Franco-Belgian comic Blueberry, illustrated by Jean Girard, which is Mobius.
Yeah.
Scripted by Jean-Michel Chalier.
Yeah. That
I'm going to have to check this movie.
The whole, it's like a 13-minute long trip scene that's on YouTube to check out if you want. Yeah.
If it's based on Mobius, I'm checking the whole thing out.
Yeah.
If they're trying to capture that Mobius feel in real life, I mean.
Oh, the effects are awesome in that scene. Also, there's two music videos real quick. Ken Ishii, he's a Japanese electronic artist. He has a video for a song called Extra, and it's all animated. I think it was done by Production 9? What was that anime studio? Project 9?
Not sure.
I forgot. I think they did like Ghost in the Shell standalone complex. Okay. But anyway, they he did. It's a whole. It's I remember seeing it on MTV's AMP like at like 2 a.m. one time. It's all anime. The whole thing looks like a drug trip. And then the other thing I want to mention is a video by a group called Soul Wax, and the song is called E Talking, and it's a funny video where these people are going to a club, and it shows pretty much all the people in the club are on different types of drugs, and they have the name of each drug. So it shows what each person is doing under the influence of that drug.
That's kind of interesting.
Except for it shows a person on DMT hanging out at a rave club, which someone's like, if you're on DMT, you wouldn't be enjoying a rave club at the moment.
Well, not for the first 15 minutes.
Because this girl in the video is all like looking at her hand all crazy, and she's on DMT, and somebody's like, that ain't right. Anyway, it's funny.
You aren't at that rave club.
Yeah, you're not even in the same dimension.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Soul Wax. I saw them at Coachella in 2007. They played that song live. It was great. E-talking. They're not hiding it. It's all about drugs.
Yeah.
So, those are my runners-up.
Well, I've got a couple. One that is a whole movie, and I almost put it almost ended up in my list, but just the humor of the Super Troopers just kind of overshadowed it a little bit.
That's almost 21 Jump Street was at the top of my list until he reminded me of A Field in England, and I went, the humor, but yeah. Fuck.
But this movie's called A Scanner Darkly?
Yes.
Ooh, nice.
By Richard
yes,
Linklater.
Bitch, yes.
Man, the whole movie is basically one giant drug trip.
Yeah.
With the fact that they did the interpolated rotoscoping where they took digital film and painted on every cell of footage to create the live animation that it's, which Richard Linklater did with his earlier film,
Waking Life. Yep.
Which, but A Scanner Darkly, it's actually one of my favorite movies starring Keanu Reeves. it's part of that, the beginning of the the Downeyissance with
definitely.
It's post Kiss Kiss Bang Bang because it came out 2006, but
right.
It's got Woody Harrelson. It's got
Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder. It's got the guy from Love in a 45, whose name I can't remember right now, who's in, also in Empire Records, and so. But
it's got that one actor who's in all those Linklater movies too.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
the long he was. I can't remember his name. I feel bad, but he was the really cool hippie guy from Dazed and Confused.
Oh yeah. But but that movie is just like the whole Substance D thing. It's the book. If you get a chance to read the book is a little bit skews darker just because it's Philip K. Dick. But
he's kind of a dick.
It's one of the best adaptations of a Philip K. Dick like story, you know, overall, because it actually just kind of focuses on the characters and doesn't worry so much about trying to be like this crazy science fiction, you know, reinvention of the action movie. Just a really good character study, really fascinating. And the fact that you don't know if your narrator is or isn't untrustworthy the whole movie.
And even whenever you find out a twist there, you're still not sure.
Yeah, you're still not sure if you've been seeing things through his perspective or other people's perspective, or have they been manipulating him?
I still own that movie. I haven't watched it in a long time. I kind of forgot a lot about it. I remember being confused throughout a lot of it, though, watching it.
Frank Bana suddenly decides that instead of Thunderbird, he's going to go and buy a nice bottle of wine. Trim costs $7. And then the alien with the eyes stands and reads his sins for 10,000 years.
Right, yeah.
No, man, it's great. They're like about 100, it's been 100 years, and he's only at the third grade when he discovered masturbation. the other two are Renton's Overdose and Trainspotting. When he just slides, then the carpet just slides into the floor.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You see the carpet in the frame of the point of view shots. That left a mark on me as far as just like symbolic storytelling. You know, fully symbolic storytelling.
That was one of the first movies with the drug scene that I ever saw too.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally see that, and there's like lots of moments in there that are kind of absurd. Like him jumping into the toilet and stuff like that. Stuff that's impossible, you know? But it tells a story, you know? It totally tells a story.
And, you know, even the part where he's trying to get off the drugs is like a drug scene in itself.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's all just the remnants of whatever he's getting out of his system.
Yeah, going.
And they play that New Order song. You know, it was supposed to be Golden Years by David Bowie in that scene, but they couldn't get the rights to it.
Well, in Renton's Overdose is Perfect Day by Lou Reed.
Yeah.
The Overdose.
Yeah.
Which is a huge... I didn't know this until I had watched like a little documentary on Lou Reed's Transformer album. But they... Apparently Perfect Day was like a huge, huge hit in England. Like a gigantic hit.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes it even more like juxtaposition. Like here's this pop song everybody knows about a perfect... it's such, you know, such a... beautiful day, and here's this guy laying in the street waiting for the taxi.
And also the part
trying to dump him,
the part where he's in the toilet and he's swimming, that's all Brian Eno too. Yeah, I had that soundtrack.
the other one that's a comedy is this is my last runner up is Will Ferrell shooting himself with the dart in Old School.
It's been so long since I've seen Old School.
Oh, man. I just remember the first time I laughed, and every single time I see it, I laugh. And so it's just, you're crazy, man. You're crazy. the way everything slows down, he just becomes this, like, completely, like a Godzilla destroying the birthday party. The Godzilla of Will Ferrell's failure. But so that's my...
I did think of one more that I was wanting to, but I don't think it's all about a drug, but the drug trips lead to other universes, so and it's actually storylines, which would be John dies at the end.
Oh, yeah. That was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
It was good.
Especially as the first Cracked Studios film.
Right.
That's such a...
It's done by the same director who did Phantasm.
Okay, I need to check. I've heard this movie a whole lot.
I think it might still be on Netflix, if it is.
I don't know why I'm getting confused with this one other movie. But
it's kind of a horror movie, but it is all about them doing this drug called soy sauce. And he's being interviewed by...
Paul Giamatti.
Okay. And they're... you know, they're just sitting at a restaurant talking about all this stuff, and he's going through how he was introduced to the soy sauce and all the, you know, weird meat monsters and alternate dimensions and all this stuff.
That was, oh man.
It
makes me want to read the book.
Yeah.
Like, and the same author has a new book out as
okay.
well.
I rewatched the trailer for it, and it's got this great cast, but the thing I love about it is that they're just like, okay, hey, just whatever you do, Don't spoil the ending. And then it pops up, John dies at the end. at one point, there's a police officer, and he's like, what are you... And John is talking... Or not John, but the lead character is talking to this police officer. He goes, what are you doing in my hotel room? And the police officer... It cuts to the police officer standing there, and he's holding a giant can of gasoline. He goes, I bet you're wondering what I'm doing with this can of gasoline. And it's like, you know, it's just completely weird, just a little bit off point. Worth watching. Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very creative.
Yeah, it is. Definitely.
Every time you think it's going to go one way, it goes, it turns.
At one point, he's using a hot dog for a cell phone. You know.
Like you do.
Yeah, that's what happens. So, Skylar, what is our next nerdatoire?
All right. I thought... about top three favorite short-run TV shows. No more than three seasons long. 1 to 2 to 3 seasons. And I say three seasons because I'm going to put this one on the table. Arrested Development, which was originally just 3 seasons, and then they did like a 4th one on Netflix. But that's the one I'm...
taking off?
Yeah. Putting it on and taking it off the table. So... come up, if you have favorite TV shows that only lasted a season or two long, maybe 3 at the most, that's what you got to bring. Because there are many good TV series that lasted, sadly, 1 season long, you know.
Yeah.
There are. So, that all being said, Skylar, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Instagram, eat dogs, all one word, lowercase.
It's so much pain. I have to admit I'm on the internet.
You can find me at Super BitCon April 2nd and 3rd. I'm volunteering there. Come say hi to me.
Come say hi to Skylar.
If you can find me, the first day I'll be working at the Video Game Museum, and the second day I'm helping to work the tournament. Super BitCon this year, it's going to be amazing. They got some guest speakers. They got one of the guys who used to host Nick Arcade. He's going to be there. Some people from Oklahoma who are local talent. A lot of YouTubers, you know, those YouTube video game guys. But yeah. Super BitCon, I need to hype it up. People, go to Super BitCon this year at the State
Super
Fair.
Super BitCon!
BitCon, bring a lot of money and buy some retro games. It's going to be a good time. Nathan.
You can find me on the Dubious Consumers Facebook page. I'm apparently just going to cough instead of talk.
You cool, man.
You can also find me on Twitter at NateWad. You can find me on the Dubious Consumer Twitter. And you can also find me on Tumblr at NateWadNeutron. Justin, have you prepared the holy litany of your name?
Fuck. Well, first of all, I do have a book out. It's called Of Gods and Madness, The Faithful. You can find that at bit.ly/OGAMTF. OGAMTF. As for me, you can find me at justindheard.com, justindheard.net, justinheard.com, at justindheard on Twitter, real justindheard on Facebook, justindheard author on Google+. Justin D. Heard on Pinterest, Justin D. Heard on Tumblr, Justin D. Heard on everything that you might be able to add.
Just type Justin D. heard.
I'm
Google.
Even on Patreon if you want to help support my career. You know,
one of these times I actually need to create like a dubious consumer one. So
yeah, well, I kind of tied the two of them together.
Okay,
like if you do a certain amount of donation or a certain number of donations, you can suggest topics and all that good stuff.
One of these days, maybe people there'll be enough people listening.
Yeah,
that that might happen.
Yeah, so you can also find me on Amazon.com/author/JustinDHurd. Basically, if you look up Google Justin D. Hurd, I'm going to be the first 20 results.
Yeah.
How's it going? It's going. So, you know,
don't forget to like, subscribe. We are available on both iTunes and Stitcher.
Yeah. You know, the big thing is we love doing this show for you guys. However, we don't advertise. Yeah. You know, we just don't have the budget for it. You know,
Maybe so, one day we'll get to where
one day
people will pay us money to advertise on the show.
But the big thing is if you like us, and you like what we do, recommend this to a friend and like and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher. That is the only way people get to learn about this show. Also, one of the big things is we, if you guys want to help join us with the consuming, we will take submissions at subs@dubiousconsumers.net, as well as our Nerd a Trois topic. If you have any of your favorite short-lived TV series you want to talk about, send us an email, once again, at...
Or comment on the Dubious Consumers Facebook page.
Right. It's subs@dubiousconsumers.net. So, Nathan, do you have a final thought?
Let's talk about Deadpool.